Podcast with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to the show Lost on ABC. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. My name is Jay.
I'm Jack.
And we have a very special guest on the show today. Very excited to welcome Mr. Bobby Moynihan. Welcome, Bobby.
Hello. Jack, you always pause when you say your name. I always feel like you might not say it.
Well, I never know if I'm supposed to say it, if I'm supposed to wait till after. We never discussed it before, so I just
like the thought that there might be one day where you don't answer, and he did not realize you were gone until then.
It would probably be that way, though.
You would know I wasn't here or not. Yeah, I mean it's always, you never know. Jack's kind of like the talent on the show. He's like the prima donna of the show. So it's just like
I'm the one with the ego.
You have to I take out all the brown M&Ms in the studio before he gets here and freaks out.
He has to paint the studio a different color each week.
Yeah,
I get it. He deserves it all.
Oh man. But yes, welcome to the show. Very excited to have you. And for those at home, Bobby Moynihan, a fantastic comedic actor, probably most well known as cast member on SNL for a while now. Since 2008, right? Or something like that, I think.
That was my seventh season last season. Yeah.
Wow, that's insane. But you know what's weird is I feel like I know I'm getting old because I look at 2008 as your start date on IMDb or whatever. I'm like, no, he's been around way longer than 2008. It's like, oh crap, it's 2015. I'm just really old.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're old.
It's hitting me now that like 2008 was almost 10 years ago. That's terrifying to me. I spent almost a fourth of my life on that show.
That's got to be a really, I don't know, just like it's one of those perennial, you know, cultural events on TV, SNL. It's like a staple. It's like a cornerstone of TV. What is it like, you know, being on that type of show? Or does it never live up to the grandiose, you know, idea of SNL?
Yeah, it's the worst. No, it's crazy. It's definitely that. It's definitely that there's not a day that goes by that you're not reminded of the history of the place. I was a gigantic SNL fan, and I used to watch all the episodes. I used to go to the, you know, Museum of Television and Radio to go find the ones that I couldn't find before the internet and you know, all that stuff. And I still have it. Like I go in now, you go in on a Saturday and they're playing that music and you just feel it. It's crazy. It's definitely a job now. Like it's definitely crossed over into the job area, but there's not a moment that goes by. There's not a Sunday that I don't wake up with a pit in my stomach. Like, oh my God, I get to do it again. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, it's almost like I'm not a Yankees fan. I'm a lowly Padres fan, but it's almost like playing for like the Yankees or something. It's this hallowed organization, you know.
I have a sign in my house. It was a Joe DiMaggio quote. I think they have it like above the entrance of Yankee Stadium for where the players go in. It was a Joe DiMaggio quote that said, every day I thank the good Lord that he made me a Yankee. And I think Derek Jeter was famous for like watching it every day before he went in, and that I have that right near my door because I feel the same way.
Yeah. What is it like? Jay was saying it's been around since 75.
Yeah, 75.
I mean, I had hair when that show first came out. I think I was 13 when that show first came out, and I can remember people talking about it. I can remember watching it, and I've watched it all. And, I mean, 40 years later, and it's still on.
Yeah.
And yeah, you guys are talking about being old.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. It's crazy. Yeah, it's. Do you remember watching the first episode, like when you were 13? Or
I actually do.
Where was that? Not your.
I think I do remember watching it, and I think my dad going by, going, "What the hell are you watching?" And I go, "It's a show. This show." I think these had Don Kirshner's rock concert was on back then, and all this different stuff, and. I didn't really know what it was, but I can remember watching it, and then after that, going to school the next day or Monday, and everybody talking about it. And after that, it was regular TV every Saturday night.
Recently celebrated its 40th anniversary, an insane 40th anniversary show. What was it like to be a part of that? Like, that had to be insane.
That was nuts. That was definitely one of those days for me where it was like 50% job and 50%. 15-year-old Bobby cannot believe that he's here in this room. Cause the job part of it, as me as working there, I wanted to be in everything. I wanted to, you know, I just wanted to be involved in some way. And, I wasn't in the show that I don't pretty much at all. Very last minute, I got made the land shark during update. So in during the update when Melissa McCarthy plays Chris Farley at the very end, the shark comes out and eats Tina, and that's me in the shark outfit. And that blew my mind just because I wasn't in the show at all. And it just happens that way sometimes. But you know, the selfish part of you is like, but it's the 40th. Like, can't I was like, I'll be a waiter. I'll walk around. I'll do anything. But then to have one of the producers, this guy Mike Shoemaker, he's actually a producer on Seth Meyers' show now. He's always looked out for me. He's a wonderful guy, and he was like, "We need somebody to do the shark, and I think you would be appreciative of doing it." And I like burst into tears. I was like, "I don't think anyone's ever done the land shark besides Chevy." So like that to me was very nerdy and very like, yeah. I cannot believe I'm getting to do this. And I've become friendly with Tina, so like to just see her head inside the shark head and her freaking out just as much as I was that we were doing the 40th. Like it was a really special night. And then the other side of it, which is just standing on stage for the good nights, and I'm standing literally in between Jack Nicholson, Paul McCartney, Keith Richards, everybody. It's too much. Like your mind doesn't understand what's going on. Like that's in your crazy field of vision, you're seeing these greats, yeah, these people that you have been, you know, looking up to your entire life, and it's crazy.
That's
it's almost too much.
Yeah, there's we've met famous people before, but there's something about like a Paul McCartney or a Jack Nicholson or Keith, they're beyond famous. Yeah. So just like, they're just not even, I don't think they're human anymore. They're just like, they're on this different plane of existence that, like, I don't even know what I would do if I was standing next to like a Paul McCartney. I would just, I don't know.
Again, I think I'd wet my pants.
Yeah, that's the weird part. 7 years in, like, I've definitely had some times where like you're walking down the hallway and you hear, "Hello, Bobby," and you realize it's Paul McCartney and you're like, "Oh, hey, Paul," and you just keep walking because you're in them. And that's happened, and like you go, am I just the biggest asshole in the world? Like, sorry, pardon me, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
You can say it. So okay,
like that, because you're like, I should be crying, I should be affected by this, but then you realize like there's nothing more than Paul McCartney wants in the world than to not be a Beatle. Like he just wants to talk and have a normal conversation. So you just treat, if you treat him like a human, like,
so is it hard to act cool? I mean, it just,
that would be my words. Like, act cool, be cool, be cool.
I don't really get that starstruck anymore. Like it hits me every once in a while. I'm more of a fanboy than anything else. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I freaked out Michael Keaton a little bit.
That was great how you guys handled the whole Michael Keaton in the opening and everything of that. I thought that was brilliant, just from that whole fanboy perspective.
Thanks. Yeah, that was me and Taryn trying to. I always go up to Taryn and say, "All right, well, I want to dress up as a penguin. What do you want to do?" That was a special one. He was a really good guy, and like the way that monologue came out, that's one of my top moments on the show.
Yeah, that was a really good, especially for me too, because I think people kind of our generation, like that's Batman. Michael Keaton is Batman, you know.
Some
people have Adam West, some people have Christian Bale, but Michael Keaton's my Batman.
Adam West is
Batman. Yeah.
I grew up on Adam West.
That's fine. That's fine.
I love Michael Keaton. Don't get me wrong.
But and then you know, Beetlejuice again. One of those. I watched that tape a million times growing up.
Oh yeah.
That's crazy. That's awesome. But I really love that you guys actually played upon that a little bit, because as a viewer, I was like, oh, it's Michael Keaton, it's Batman, and it was a great kind of pseudo play on that. So I just want to give you kudos for that.
Thanks.
But you know, is it, you've probably been asked this question a billion times, but, you know, what is it like kind of creating a character? Because SNL is famous for kind of having these characters that have these catchphrases or have this way of talking that everybody does. Like, well, isn't that special? And, you know, Anthony Crispino and Drunk Uncle, I think you have two really, you know, awesome recurring characters that I know personally just in my own life day to day. Like, that stuff is just dropped on the daily. What is it like to have, like, something of that much of a cultural impact?
It's crazy. It's like it's humbling and it's weird. That Drunk Uncle is some like dumb joke that I used to do with another buddy of mine, this guy Chris Gethard. He's a comedian. Just to make him laugh, I would pretend that I was really, really drunk and I would start crying and asking for a ride home. And it was just this weird bit that we would do for each other and like never really thought about it, you know, the first year or two on the show. And then one night, Colin Jost, me and Colin write all the Crispinos and the Drunk Uncles together, and he was like, "You got anything for update?" And I was like, "I don't know, maybe like this Drunk Uncle thing." And I had worked on like another sketch for like 13 hours that day and thought it was going to be my masterpiece. thought it would be the thing that like really put me over the top on SNL. It was like about a suit salesman. I had gotten a suit like a week before and thought the guy, I was like, well, this guy will be my, you know, will be my Gilly or will be my, you know, my Conan. It couldn't have bombed harder. And then I was like, well, at least I got this dumb Drunk Uncle thing. And yeah, that one just worked for some reason. And then, you know, cut to, you know, a year later where you're signing the bobblehead for it and you're like, what's happening? I'm on SNL and I got my SNL bobblehead. Like, I'm done. I can retire.
Football, you have these busts, and baseball, you have these plaques. So for SNL, it's a bobblehead. If you have the bobblehead shrine,
then you've made it.
Yeah, it's just straight up merchandise.
the 30 Rock NBC store.
Yeah, just I don't know why. Like, I got ever since that day, ever since I saw that bobblehead, for some reason, I've gotten much lazier. Like, I just go like, that's. I mean, like, what else do I have to do in life? Like,
I'm
that's
done.
It. Like, I'm well,
you know, there's something to that though about like the. Creative spirit or in, you know, in terms of creating, you know, work, art or comedic or anything, you know, sometimes we work so hard on this one thing because we think this is going to be it. This is my magnum opus. But then it's just weird how creativity works sometimes that it's the thing that you even think about becomes the greatest thing ever. And that's what's great about kind of that spark of creation, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's another thing about SNL too, is like I spent 15 years preparing, you know, trying to get on that show and doing characters at Upright Citizens Brigade and doing them over and over and over again for years. And then you do them once on SNL and Lauren's like, yeah, I don't think we're going to do that again. And you're like, but I did that character for 10 years. And he's like, yeah, but it's done here. You know, they've seen it and now they can watch it again because of the internet.
Just rips your heart
and
out.
And then that's it. So it's a different ball game, you know, like back in the day, SNL like created, not, I don't know if it created it, but it, you know, it definitely moved along the character sketch where, you know, you would hear a funny theme song and then, you know, you would hear a character and they would have a catchphrase and you could do it multiple times. Now it's much harder. Like it's really, really hard to get a character like that on the show now, because that's not necessarily the mentality of the viewers and also because of the internet. Like, you know, if you do a character once, they watch it 20 times. You know, back in the day, I think they only did Wayne's World a couple times.
Really?
You know, but like, yeah, I think they might have only done it like a handful of times, like not that many. I mean, like now, or there were the cheerleaders.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did them like 20 times, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like because they wanted to see it. But like, but like that weird period back in the day of like Wayne's World and I think like Sprockets, like I think they only did it like 4 or 5 times, which is fascinating because you remember them so much.
Like, yeah. But, yeah,
there were people who did them over and over again, and then there were people who didn't.
Yeah. Huh. That's crazy. It's weird to think about. But again, it's like Wayne's World almost kind of went beyond SNL with the movie, and it just kind of became this weird, it's one of the few successful SNL movies. Like, there's so many that just didn't make it, and then you have like Wayne's World, Blues Brothers, it's just like blew it out of the water, you know?
Yeah, I could do 5 SNLs after I'm done with SNL with all the characters that haven't gotten on. Like,
is it like you said, you worked on that one sketch for 13 hours and you said it bombed, and then Drunk Uncle takes off. Was it at the end of the night, do you go, wow, really, I worked so hard on that, but that's the one they that took off? Is it frustrating?
Yeah, I mean, that's my entire job for the past 7 years is just here Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I didn't sleep. I stayed up writing, or me and my buddy stayed up writing, and we wrote this thing, and then you hand it in, and then 3 hours later, you read it, and it's gone, and you'll never see it again. That's it. Wow. And it's a lot of just get over it, move on. The first couple of years I was a disaster because you would be like, this is perfect. This is perfect. Yeah. You're like, we're not saying it's not funny. We're just saying it's not right for this show. Or you write something and it's just not right for that host. But then another host really gets it and really wants to do it. So there's rules, but the rules change every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy.
That's got to be tough. I don't know if I could handle that.
Well, then you look at somebody like a Daryl Hammond that's done it for, he's done the announcing now, but he was on for like 70 years.
I think 14 years, I think.
But it must take a certain temperament to be able to do it. I mean, you've done it. You've had your 7 years now. You must just have a certain temperament to where you can handle that type of ambiguity.
Yeah, I definitely lost my mind there in the beginning. It definitely changed me into a different person. but there's also there's different ways of handling yourself at that place. If you're someone like Daryl, you know, he was there for so long because he was so needed. Because I mean, you could throw that man any impression and he'll just do it immediately verbatim,
mm-hmm.
right back to you. And like, I don't necessarily think. In the last couple of years of Daryl's time there, he was there every night till 5 a.m. writing. He's like, I gotta get on. Like, I think he was like, what do you want me to do? Walt Disney? Fine. I'll see you tomorrow. Like, you know, like, and rightfully so after 14 years. But there's definitely the part of me that goes like, I've been there for 7 years and I'm like, I don't need to be.
Yeah.
I don't need to be on the show this week. I'm tired. And then you start to walk home and you go, what am I doing? Like, I'm on it now. Like, I shouldn't be. I've definitely walked halfway home a couple times this season and went back and gone, what am I doing? Like, just go back and really try and work, because it gets so hard after 7 years of you know, there's some form of disappointment. Even if it's the best week of your life,
yeah,
there was at least 5 moments of that week where you were super, super, super disappointed.
Wow,
man, that's crazy.
I couldn't take that kind of roller coaster, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
of course, that's life. That's how.
Well, I think comedic acting in general, it's such a tough thing to do. Like it's the old, they say it all the time that comedic acting's tougher than dramatic acting.
Right.
To a certain
what way, I find funny, you may not find funny.
Yeah. It's such a subjective mm-hmm. thing, humor. So I think just in order to be a successful comedian, you just have to be able to handle one, you know, jokes bombing or people not getting it or whatever. You just have to have this certain part of your personality that can just handle. You know, the rejection or things not working or
just
keep
bring
going.
Jay, or bring Jay with you because he's an easy laugher.
Yeah.
He's the Ed McMahon of the podcast.
I'm an easy laugher. I laugh a lot. I'm very easy to please.
Have you ever had something where, I know I was thinking from like day one's SNL has been the, you know, cutting edge. There was no, you know, you look at the sketch that Chevy Chase and Richard Pryor did where their word association.
Oh, yeah.
Could you do that today?
Oh God! No.
That sketch.
That could you do that sketch with somebody else and have that and have the white guy use the N word?
I'm
wondering like if we did it with like Karen and Kevin Hart, like I'm trying to like or something like.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart comes to the show a lot. Like I'm wondering, he's kind of the top male, you know, comic right now.
Right.
I'm wondering like what would happen if they did that. I think it depends. Like I think because everyone loves Kevin Hart, we might get away with it because it's Kevin Hart and mm-hmm. people love it. But I just don't know if it's right anymore.
Yeah, because I think with the internet, you know, and like everything, it just would get out there and just be like a backlash.
It's such a darker, condescending thing now. Like back then, it was like that. Like back then, you could do like Archie Bunker. I think probably
right.
said it.
Yeah, yeah.
But like you know, yeah. Like when we did the Muhammad sketch this year, the people went,
oh, yeah,
you know,
oh, yeah, yeah,
pretty crazy about that one. It's like. But I think that's, I mean, to me, that's what SNL is for. To me, SNL is for, like, oh, my God, did they just say that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are we? And now everyone talks about it the next day.
Yeah.
Like, that was, you know, that's part of the show for me. Like, I can't believe these guys did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the internet, though. Twitter, it's on Twitter, Facebook, and mm-hmm. right after it's said.
Well, that's why I gave SNL credit. For 40 years, you would think after a while it would... I mean, it probably is, to a certain extent, very corporate in a sense, but the fact that, you know, SNL can still kind of keep a little bit of that edge, a little bit of that, you know, it's live and you don't know what's going to happen, and that kind of, you know, putting that mirror back to society, you know, and kind of what they do really well. You know, yeah. I give them credit for that. But I think it's also, you know, getting just a great cast, you know, and bringing those people in. And but yeah, it's really awesome.
Yeah, it's a fine line that Lauren's got to walk now, especially because it's so much more corporate. Like, I mean, it's essentially a cartoon, I mean, a commercial for movies that are coming out or albums that are coming out.
Yeah.
And that's this platform that they're using the celebrities to come out and do it. But there's also that, you know, that part of it that it's live and that these comedians just came up with it this week and they're doing it. Like back in the day, like in the 70s, like I remember there was the Buck Henry episode where they did like the Samurai Deli and he got one of the samurai sketches and Buck Henry accidentally cut himself in the face with the sword.
Yep.
And then throughout the rest of the episode, people just kept adding Band-Aids to their face. And then when they did update, they had like slings and bike at nights. Everyone had, you know, Band-Aids and slings and crutches. And like, to me, like, I wish we could do that kind of stuff more. Like, like just fly by the seat of your pants, kind of like we're doing this. And like, it definitely has been getting that way. Like, we've gotten a couple little things on that they don't normally let us do, like just kind of new structured things. Or like there was a piece a couple years ago that Forte did where it was just a standalone commercial called the Closet Organizer, where Will Forte was the closet organizer and he was just a guy in a blue outfit that would come to your house and clean your closet. But then the very last sketch of the night was a live sketch, and it was John Hamm and Will Forte just sitting at a bar, and one of the guys, and just halfway through the sketch out of nowhere, John Hamm was like, "Hey, are you the closet organizer guy?" And like, and then the whole sketch turns into that Will Forte didn't want to go home with him because this happens all the time where people just want him to come home with them so he can clean their house. And it was ridiculous, but it was just the idea that like to bring something back in the middle of nowhere, like it really like that. I like that kind of comedy, and
like
I was very proud of
level.
Yeah, I was very proud of Lorne and SNL for kind of making that jump.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really awesome. So you do have a new movie that came out on Netflix, Staten Island Summer.
Yes,
and it's it seems like, and again, I haven't seen it. I'm not the Jon Stewart of the world where I read the whole book or watch the whole movie beforehand. I'm just not that professional or have the time.
But, I understand.
But it looks like it's kind
That's
of like
funny. I listened to every one of your podcasts for many, many years.
Oh man. I'm trying to be honest. I'm not gonna be one of those guys that tries to act like he's seen the movie
that
hasn't seen it.
I'll watch it tonight.
You know, it was really like, oh, Bobby Moynihan's gonna be on the show tonight. I should probably read up, you know, what's Bobby doing, so I can at least have an educated guess of what's going on
just,
in his life.
Just being a weirdo in different places, pretty much.
Remember how early we talked about someone's ego?
What? No, I'm just saying. I had housework to do this weekend.
Housework.
All right, I'm sorry.
Oh my god, you killed some bees.
I had two wasp nests to kill. Okay, it was traumatic.
I was out there with him. It was almost like he was going to war.
I had to clean up mulch. It's a really exciting life, Bobby. It's so
I get
exciting.
It. Yeah. Mulch has to be dealt with.
So Staten Island Summer, it seems to be in the spirit of a Porky's or Meatballs, kind of like the 80s comedy.
Yeah, it's kind of just one of those, you know, here's a bunch of guys trying to get laid this summer kind of movie. It's Colin Jost wrote it. He's one of the, you know, he's one of the head writers for SNL. He's the update anchor. Colin Jost wrote it, and we all shot it over the past two summers.
Nice. So Colin Jost, it seems like he's very much involved. He's head writer. It seems like you're really close with him. Is it tough to see kind of the criticism that he's gotten being the Weekend Update guy? And not even just him, but it seems like there's always, this is the worst cast of SNL ever.
At the beginning it used to really grate on me just because I love the show so much and I didn't want to disrespect it in any way.
Yeah.
But now you realize, like, if you go and look at Amy and Tina's first, you know, couple weeks and Seth's first couple months, everyone's like, we hate them. They suck. they're not like the people we're used to. And then you know, they gradually, you know, that goes away. And people, you know, people change. I think Colin was super nervous at the beginning. Who wouldn't be? And then now I think he's killing it. I think he's getting better and better every time he does stuff, he's getting more comfortable. And that's the hard part of it. Colin also had it hard because, like, he came in with Cecily for a bit, and then it was Che. Like, you know, there was a lot of, in that period right before the 40th anniversary, I think there was a lot of, like, we're losing, you know, some greats. We're losing our Kristens and our Bills and our Andys, you know, yeah. Fred, Jason, and, you know, Seth. You know, Seth leaving was one of the biggest blows, I think, in SNL history as far as just, you know, he was the captain of the ship, you know, and then it was devastating to lose those guys. You know, it's like a family. You love having them around.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we all went, oh, we still got to do this. And it's the 40th anniversary. Okay. Well, let's, like, we're all talented people. We all got here for a reason. Let's try and do it. So yeah. Now I think we're, you know, starting to hit that pace.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. It definitely, at least in the 4th anniversary, I feel like, at least in the beginning of the season, stuff felt a little, it seems like it just a couple episodes in, then you guys start to get your stride and everything starts to feel really good, and then the sketches flow really well. I love that organicness about the show where it just stuff starts to gel over time, and then you get in kind of that sweet spot where things really heat up.
Yeah, it ebbs and flows. It's definitely, you know, since I've been on the show, I feel like, you know, it's gone up and down, you know, and I'll be the first to admit when I go, hey, maybe that wasn't our best. But, you know, it still was really, really hard. I think one of the things that people don't realize is if we have not the greatest show in the world, we still tried really hard and did it all that week.
Yeah, and that's crazy.
It's really, you know, so it's like even the bad shows are pretty good if you think about it. What, you know, we didn't do anything. We didn't really start anything until Wednesday, guys. So I get mad. I get like, when people go like, hey, you're on SNL right here. The show's not funny. And you go like,
oh, thanks.
And you're like, all right, well, why don't you come with me and spend the next 79 hours trying to come up with the most, you know, best funny thing you've ever thought of in your life.
Plus it's tough because you're in New York, and my wife's a New Yorker, so I can say this, but, you know, they don't hold anything back. You're walking around this, you're like, hey, you guys, you really suck right now, man. Like, it's like they just let you know, you know?
Yeah, constantly. I love, like, people that run out of their way. I'll see them coming, and like, hey, and completely out of breath, like, hey, you the guy from SNL? And I go, yeah, and they go, all right. Tell Andy I don't like him, and then they walk away, and you're like, "What? Why would you say that?"
So you should do it in San Diego, because then people just, they're kind of laid back. They're, hey, at least you tried.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you gave it an effort. It's okay. Go to the beach.
It's really amazing what people think it's okay to say.
Do you guys feed off, like, because I know sometimes, like, you'll have, like, a Justin Timberlake or something. Do you guys get more, I want to say, more excited, more pumped up, or is it just there's more energy in the, does it help to...
Well, it definitely seems like there's some hosts where the energy works better than maybe some others that aren't as comfortable with sketch.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, there's all different kinds. Like, if Justin Timberlake's coming, it depends on your mood. Because if you're in a good mood and you want to be in the show, or you have, you know, it's like you're really aching to do something. Like, he's a really smart, funny guy, and he knows the show well. So he'll sit down and be like, all right, what do you want to do? Let's try and come up. Like, Justin writes, like... He's a funny, he could be a cast member. And then, but he's also the kind of guy where if you're like, oh, Justin's here, he's got it. I'm tired. I got other work, and I got to do laundry this week.
I got to clean mulch.
you're like, oh, Justin's got it. He's here. but then, you know, there's some weeks like that. And then there's weeks like, and I've said this before, there's weeks like Bruno Mars where, like, on Monday, I'm like, I don't care about Bruno Mars. Like, who cares? Like, Bruno Mars isn't funny. And then by Tuesday, you're like, oh, this guy's amazing. And he's really, really funny. And, like, he's got a completely different energy. And, like, I remember the Bruno Mars Pandora sketch.
Yes, Myers, that's a great one. I remember that. That was he hosted. It was a good one.
I just remember being in the studio and it feeling like, you know, like when Paul McCartney or them come out, like it felt different. Like, it was like he just hit some sort of electric nerve on everybody in that studio that night. And, like, more so than, like, you know, some of the Five Timers Club sketches or some of the legendary sketches, like when people come back, like, you know, like I was in a church chat with the church lady. I played Snooki, and like I remember that just like not being able to understand like what was going on. I was like, I'm in the church. I'm the church lady's looking at me, talking to me, and we're on television. But like that, like is crazy. But then something like that Bruno Mars sketch, like just equally as insane. Like I remember sitting there going, like they don't love, like they love this. Like it was crazy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, we've talked a lot about SNL, but really, this is technically a lost podcast, so I don't want to.
I forgot.
I gotta.
About it.
Yeah, I gotta run.
Oh dang!
No, I'm just kidding. No.
Yeah, gotta go. Thanks.
I've never seen the show.
They were dead the whole time.
So what's really awesome is that you're a hardcore Lost fan. To put it in perspective, so you know, when we first, I guess how this all happened, you followed us on Twitter, and it was just like, is that the real Bobby? No, that's not the real Bobby Moynihan.
I dropped my wife. It was raining. I dropped her off at the store. So I'm sitting in the car. I got my phone. I go, huh, this can't be the real one. Like, why would you follow me? And then I called Jay. I texted him. I texted Jay. Yeah. Hey, you know, he goes, was he following me? I go, I don't know. I'm not on your Twitter account. I don't know. So then we said, Jay, Jack. I go, well, why is he following us? So I kind of stalked. Was it called stalking?
Yeah, stalking. Internet stalking.
Internet stalking. I go, holy crap, he's a Lost fan.
I think there's a picture of you with like this whole bunch of Lost memorabilia. Yeah. But yeah, so a big collection, a large, you know, whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it's gotten worse and worse. Being on SNL didn't help.
That's gotta be tough because I have a collecting room, but you know I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina, where you know housing's pretty cheap. That's gotta be tough in New York to have space for all this stuff.
I'll be honest with you. I have something that's been in my living room for about 9 months that I have no space for, and I just like it. It was the biggest mistake I've ever made as far as my Lost collecting, but I just can't get rid of it, and I can't give it away because I love it, but it's taking up most. I have the fish biscuit machine from
no way.
I swear to God, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done.
Wait, so did you do one of those like Lost auctions, like the like a prop auction?
I think I keep Cancer Gets Lost afloat. I think I might have cured cancer this past year.
Wow. Wow,
yeah,
that thing's huge.
That's gotta be a big.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge.
So does it actually make fish biscuits?
I press the button constantly every time I pass it. it does have a slot for it. I have not been able to acquire any actual biscuits yet.
We've had a fish biscuit.
I'm trying.
We had someone make fish biscuits.
That's right.
For us.
They didn't make fish biscuits. Yeah. It's like a cookie. Basically.
It was a cookie, but it was
amazing.
It was pretty cool.
Wow, that's intense. I don't know if anybody that's listening to Lost Podcast right now has like something on that level. Like that would be like the equivalent of like the Dharma hatch door or like a piece of the plane, like the door of a plane or something.
I have some good stuff, but that's now I have ones that are personally more wonderful. I should probably go back to the beginning and explain.
Okay.
I was just a gigantic Lost fan. I listened to your guys' show every week. That was like my routine was just Lost in that. And, I just really dug the show. I really enjoyed the writing of it. I loved everything about it for so long. And then, I was just a big nerd and I had a Lost sweatshirt on, during the Good Nights at SNL one night. And, I just got a message from Damon Lindelof saying, are you, like, what's going on here? Like, are you really a fan? And I was just, it was like a couple nights before the finale. And I was like, yeah, I mean, like, I was like, I'm sure people tell you this all the time, but like, I might be the biggest Lost fan in the world. And, we became close. I ended up having dinner with him and Carlton and like, Jorge and Michael Emerson. No, I went to the Times talk that they did like the day before the finale aired.
Oh yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And, that's how I met them and Jorge, and we went out to dinner afterwards, and I just kind of hit it off with Damon and Jorge, and we've been just friendly with them ever since. And I brought Damon and Jorge to SNL, and we've just kind of started hanging out. And then Jorge is just a dream. I mean, you guys know he's just the kindest, wonderful man in the world.
Yes, he is.
I hit it off with him very quickly, and then like the last 20 minutes, I asked him a lot of lost questions.
I feel like we're cool now. I have some questions.
Yeah. he gave me, he sent me his Mr. Cluck. I have like a Mr. Cluck's uniform.
Nice.
I have, Damon sent me, I said to Damon, he said to me when he was at SNL, he's like, I've always wanted to come to SNL. And I was just like, oh, being on SNL and being an action figure, that was like my life's dream, just trying to be funny. And then a couple weeks later in the mail, I got a Dharma Initiative Bobby Moynihan action figure.
No way.
That he made, that he had made, and it's like one of my most prized possessions in the world. It's
That's
my favorite
awesome.
Thing ever.
That's awesome.
And yeah, and just through my, I think I have a couple Dharma beers. I have two Virgin Mary statues. I have
what's inside the statues
in the other room.
What's inside? Say
it again.
What's inside the statues? Is there anything
hair on?
Yeah, it's like little brown sugar tablets.
Okay.
I hope, because now I'm addicted to brown sugar. I ended up just like, I've always had a collecting problem, but then like once that came out, like, and I got a couple like little things, then it was all over.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have a giant piece of the plane signed by Jack Bender.
Wow.
I got one of the pneumatic tubes with the notebook. I got a couple, I got like a Dharma mac and cheese. I have like a couple, like a bunch of signed stuff by all the actors, mm-hmm. and a bunch of boxes of the mac and cheese signed by them. I have all the action figures signed by everybody, and then they made like, oh yeah, it's too much. I'm already,
wow, you really are a lunatic.
Well, here's, I think, you know, this whole time people listening at home, the Lost fans, like, oh, I like Bobby, it's a really nice guy, but now they're like, screw you, Bobby, it's that, nobody should have that much cool stuff, Bobby.
You know, a lot of people are gonna be jealous about hearing that.
But
I'm the biggest Lost fan.
No, seriously, I'm the big. No, so you know, having that much stuff, do you have like
another
standard
house?
You know, New York apartment? Because I have a lot of friends who live in New York. I've been to those apartments. It's like the size of a shoebox. Like, does it just take over your living space?
My apartment was pretty small. Now I have a room that's essentially just all Lost stuff, and it's starting to get a little weird. And then now I just have a storage unit that someday.
Okay.
I will display this in all its glory.
I just have a few things.
Well, see, I'm a collector too, because I'm a nerd. You know, I collect. The studio that we're in right now is also like my, you know, display room. So, you know, I
got all these things staring at me.
I collect, you know, old toys. So I have He-Man, Ghostbusters, Ninja Turtles, and I got it everywhere. But you know, my goal is just to have like a basement and then just like totally deck it out like a museum of all this stuff. Is that your goal, to one day to like have a museum of this stuff?
Yeah, every job I get, I'm like, okay, how much money? Because now my entire thing was like, I just wanted to be on SNL, and now I'm done. Like, I'm going to retire. The only thing I have left now is I'm going to work until I can make enough money to get a house somewhere. I don't care where, and just like 40 yards in the backyard is a hatch, and then you just go down there, and it'll just be a shame room of glory. Like,
that's awesome. Maybe it's nothing to be shamed about. All right, it's really cool. All right,
that's a little bit to be ashamed about. I should be saving for my child.
Well, see, now it's I have a 14-month-old at home, so like in my collection, I had to raise all the expensive stuff out of the reach of his level. So now it's slowly getting smaller and smaller.
I do like to bring him into the room, and I said, look at all this stuff your dad's not going to let you touch. Sure, they may look like toys, but no, your dad will never let you touch these things.
I was actually having a thought of, like, if I get a house with a room like that, do I build, like, a fake front closet? So when the kid opens it, he just sees a closet, and he's like, well, there's nothing in there.
Yeah.
And then they would have to go beyond that to see everything.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, that has to be in part of, you know, Bobby Moynihan's, how long do I have to work to retire at a certain level? That has to be in your budget. So you have to have, like, I wouldn't even do a fake closet. I would go out and have, like, a bookcase that you press a lever or something, and it rotates and goes into the secret collection.
No, a donkey wheel.
A donkey wheel.
We talked from Bobby Moynihan from Saturday Night Live, and his goal in life is mostly, like, trapdoors.
You know what you could, instead of retiring,
You can just open a museum.
I just want Webster's house.
You can
Webster's
take,
house where you can go on the clock.
You can take people on tours of your lost stuff.
So really big Lost fan, and the reason why we kind of brought back the Lost podcast, and we've been, you know, here and there with releasing shows on a regular basis, but it's more just to kind of continue the conversation on the show that we love so much.
Slowest rewatch in history.
But it's really to kind of talk about, it's been, you know, we're coming up on our 10-year podcasting anniversary in October 1st.
That's not.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's
not.
What did you get me, Jay?
I still have until the October 1st.
Okay, all right.
What do you get for a podcasting anniversary? Like, it's,
what is 10 years for marriage? I mean, I'm in like 20 something, so
I don't know. I don't know what.
I don't know why, but this, every time I think of Jack, this comes up. I'm a very big fan of like Survivor and Big Brother and those shows like that.
Mm-hmm.
And all I ever think about is, didn't Jack, you auditioned for?
Oh yes,
Survivor.
Yes, several times.
And am I crazy on a Zamboni?
Yep,
naked.
Yep,
naked on a Zamboni. I am right.
And,
okay.
And Jay filmed it.
And that's the sick part.
Yeah. It was 30.
What are you doing? Do it again. Get back on.
It was 30 something. I think it was 30 degrees outside. There was snow, and I got inside the rink, and it's freezing. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
So I drove it around. And I just said I had to put some paper towels on the seat because my butt was cold. And Jay's like, I have to do this. I go, well, who else is going to film it? So, but
I was like, really? Because I was in high school at the time. I think I was a senior in high school when I did
my
that.
My eyes.
The sad part was, so I was like part of, you know, the high school, you know, news team or whatever. We had the A and D department, you know, the AV. I was an AV club, but we had. We had the VHS tapes, and then we had to put it into this, you know, video editor.
That's where you edited, right?
Yeah, so I went into the school, and I had like the raw footage on VHS, and then I had to use this, you know, VHS video editor. So I had to like somehow import this video of him naked on a Zamboni in my school, like during lunch, and hopefully nobody saw me trying to. And they're like, what the hell are you doing?
I was in the pool.
That's amazing.
I still have.
Well, if you ever audition again, I'm offering. I will be in your Survivor video.
Really?
But no one wants that. But if you, yeah, because I feel like, I don't know why, I can't go on Survivor. I would never make it. I would die in 4 seconds. But I would love to go on Big Brother, but I can't now because it's on a different network. And but I think you should try again for Survivor. And
I will take you up on that.
Yeah,
I will take you up on that.
But looking back on the show, 10 years, and I guess so, a Zamboni, is that, I'm getting you a golden Zamboni, is that the...
No, I don't want a Zamboni.
No, actually, I have the raw footage.
How about a pair of pants?
I have the raw footage of that videotape, and we should do something with that, I feel.
I would love to see that someday.
That needs to be released
to
the masses.
It needs to be burned.
You know, looking back on the show 10 years later, obviously a huge fan, you're a huge fan. What is it like for you looking back on the show, you know, 10 years after it's premiered and 5 years after it kind of went off the air? Has your love changed at all? I guess not, since you just bought a fish biscuit in the machine, but you know, looking back on it, like what's your thoughts 10
I'll
years
tell you,
later?
My love for the fish biscuit is now non-existent, but, just because it takes up so much room. But, no, I mean, I think I was definitely someone in the boat of like, I loved it from start to finish. Obviously it had, you know, it had its couple moments here and there,
mm-hmm.
The Biling episode, probably the biggest egregious moment for me, but like the ending for me, like, and this is where I start to sound like a maniac. The ending for me was like, I remember that day, like just being like, I don't know. The ending for me was perfect. Like I went, yeah, just move on with life. And you take the things that you take the things you made connections with you, and life isn't that hard. And you just kind of, you know, like you just kind of do it. And that's the whole thing. The gift is life. And to me, like, I don't know, that ever since that day, the last day of Lost, I've been a different person. I've been a much calmer person, but,
nice.
I enjoyed the ending. Like I loved it. And I understand that some people don't, and I've definitely had my moments in conversation where I was like, maybe I did want more, but like, but I always want more, like, you know, of that world.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I guess, you know, is there a bit of, because I think Jack and I both really love the ending
and we did it,
you know, with 3,000 people watching the show at the same time for our finale thing. So it was, we kind of this collective experience.
And if
that
we would have known
special.
You were a Lost fan, we would have invited you.
Yeah, we would have gotten you, we'd have flown you out there.
Yeah.
But there's something about being the Lost guy, and I've said this before, like you just get this reputation, like, oh, you did that thing, you're the Lost guy, so why were they dead the whole time? Do you, as a big Lost fan, do you get that kind of thing from people?
There's nothing like taking a fandom that you have to defend every idiot who comes up to you. No, I mean, one of my best friends can't stand it, and I think he can't stand it because he knows I love it so much, and he gives me a hard time about it. And yeah, there are definitely the people like, oh, you're a Lost fan, and my favorite is Still. And I'm like, yeah.
It's true though.
It was a really good show. It meant a lot to me, and it definitely, like, as far as holding up, like, it's definitely like, it's not like a period piece, but it definitely lives in its own world of that time. But there were just so many things that happened in that show that never happened before, and almost set a precedent for how TV, you know, TV was successful after it.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, it's like everyone says Breaking Bad is the best, you know, ending in TV history, and I'm not saying it's not an amazing ending, but it's like, if people didn't get so uproarious about the ending of Lost, I don't know if, you know, like, who knows what would have happened with the ending of other shows? It all of a sudden became like this big important thing, and like,
yeah,
you know, to have the ending be this perfect. I think I'm somebody in my life who likes a little, you know, tied up bow in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But Lost definitely changed that in me a little bit, where I'm like, yeah, maybe I don't need to know everything, and maybe I could just be happy with the journey of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing. You still have people talking about different theories about what's going on, different things, you know, and they're still debating things that happened or didn't happen. And I think that's the beauty of the show. For me,
anyway. that was the best part about it. Like, you know, it's like I went to the 10th anniversary at the Paley Center.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I flew out to LA for that, and just to hear, like, first of all, to be in a room of the Kodak Theater, which is gigantic, and it's filled with Lost fans, it was, like, the best. And then just to hear them, like, people still, like, who was on the outrigger? Who was shooting them? Like, still wanting to know that information. And it's, like, it's the best. That's the whole point of the show, was, like, the world they created was so vast and had so much minutia in it that, like, I said something to, I'm all over the place right now. I said something to Damon. I have thrown in approximately, without exaggerating, I would say 20, 25 Lost references into SNL sketches I've gotten on.
Mm-hmm.
I told Damon once, I was like, yeah, I was like, he's like, he mentioned a sketch that I wrote, and I was like, yeah, go back and watch that again. I made a Lost reference. And he's like, what did you say? I was like, oh, I do it all the time. You can see them in most of the sketches I'm in, but in this one in particular, it took place on an airplane. And if you listen, I have Jack's seat number, and then I say Rose's seat number. And he was like, how do you know Rose's seat number? I don't know Rose's seat number. Like, he was like, I don't think we ever came up with that. And I was like, yeah, probably some fan did and made a seating chart, and I was the idiot that was looking at it for 3 days straight.
I bought it.
Yeah.
I have Rose's seat. It's right here next
to
me.
And Rose is here.
I have Rose tied up in my living room.
Well, she does work for Dharma. So.
God.
But, you know, it's just that, like, I love that. I love getting lost in that world. It's like Star Wars. There's so much stuff that you could get lost in it. It's wonderful.
Well, I think Lost was one of those shows, too, that I would watch the episode, we'd podcast about it, and then I would stay awake for like 5 hours laying in bed, thinking about what happened, and then have to get up and go on the computer, hear what people were talking about, then go back. And when I lose all this sleep, just thinking about that stupid show.
Oh, yeah. But that was the best. I mean, those couple of years of my life, that was it. Was watch the show, immediately start it over and watch again while looking up stuff on the internet.
Yep.
And then go to all my blogs where I found all my stuff and talk about it, and then listen to you guys the next day and then wait patiently and be annoyed that it wasn't on every night.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's one of those, the change, to your point, I think the whole idea that a serialized show could exist on TV and even, you know, it's demanding that, okay, we need an end date. We can't just meander on forever. It really changed the way a lot of these, like, I don't think Breaking Bad, they were able to do five cohesive seasons. I don't know if that would have existed if Lost didn't pave the way to say
yeah.
It needs to be a cohesive kind of beginning, middle, end. It really charted the path. And that's what it's kind of, you know, because, you know, we've met Damon, we know, we've had conversations with him, we've done podcasts with him, and that was kind of the sad thing, I think, at the end of Breaking Bad, when, you know, everybody's kind of just went to town on him, unfortunately, on Twitter, and he's kind of pulled back from that, because I think he's such a funny guy.
Yeah, it's the worst. I've talked to him a couple times, even at that Paley Center, like, it's like, he sounds like there's part of him that, to me, when he talks about Lost, that sounds like he failed in some way.
Yeah.
And I wake up every day and want to just hug him and go,
yeah,
you did a great, amazing job.
Yeah. Well, like, look at how you are in the fandom out there. Like you said, it's just, there's the haters are going to hate no matter what, but people love this show.
Yeah. I told him, I was like, trust me, I'm on Saturday Night Live. Not everyone loves it, but we're doing it. And he knows. I mean, he's responsible for some of like the best science fiction and best work that's come out in the past 10 years. Like, the man is an absolute genius and also just a complete sweetheart of a man.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just like, I don't know how to explain this to him even more, how much it changed my life. Like, my relationship with my girlfriend is very based on Lost. Like, we lost, you know, we met, you know, and spent a lot of time watching this, and, you know, a lot of our life had revolved around it for a long time. And
yep,
it was something that meant a lot to me and still does. And I know it's just a TV show, but SNL meant a lot to me. And then I got on it and I was super happy.
Yeah.
So I try to do the same thing with Lost. I try to surround myself with things I love.
Well, or even just being on the show. Like, it's a shame it kind of went too soon in your SNL tenure in stardom. Like, if you could have been an actor on Lost and SNL at that point, just like, all right, I'm good. I'm done. Yeah. I'm out.
I go through my resume now, or like what's going on in my life or what I'm about to do and certain things that are coming out. And I'm like, I'm the luckiest person in the world. And then there's this one tiny bit of me that's like, but I was never on Lost. I remember begging Damon. I was like, I'll beg you just to walk by in the background I wanted to be a log carrier so bad.
They died.
Just way, way, way in the background, but I never had the balls to ask.
Like, oh,
I never,
you should have.
I know, but like,
he would have let you do it.
I know he totally would have, but, and I'm mad that I didn't, but NBC probably wouldn't have let me do it, but, yeah.
I tried to get on as a,
something I would have loved to have done. There's actually a guy that works at SNL, this guy, Richie, we're big Lost fans, and all we ever talk about is this. Now I can't say it on here because I don't want anyone to steal it. But a plan to reboot Lost and how we would bring back Lost, and we think we figured out a really good way to do it.
Ooh, that's exciting!
I really am seriously trying to figure out a way to bring it back because I want more.
Listen, we do a panel at Comic-Con every year, San Diego Comic-Con, and one of the big discussions at those panels is, you know, what can Lost be rebooted? Can Lost come back? And I think there is this great opportunity, and depending on how it's done and who could do it, but there's so much mythology there and there's so much character there that it's ripe for something to kind of continue on. It doesn't have to be those characters again. I mean, I don't know. There's many ways you could do it, but I think it'd be exciting for somebody to kind of take it and start it anew.
Yeah, me and this guy, Richie, just keep talking about starting a series that starts with the kids from Lost. So it would be like Aaron, you know, Sun and Jin's kid, everyone, and now they're old enough to realize what has happened, and they have to go figure out what happened to their parents.
Huh.
that's what I really want to do.
That'd be dope.
And Walt, you gotta have Walt. Walt.
Well, Walt's the new Jacob.
Well, yeah, Walt. Walt's still. They get there. They find Walt, and he's like, "All right, let me explain everything." that's where we start.
Did you? I know a lot of people didn't like Across the Sea. And it just seems to be either you liked it or you hated it. Did you like it?
Wait, which one was that?
Across the Sea. That's one with Alice and Janning.
The third to last, where you finally the whole backstory
you find out Jacob. Yeah. Jacob. Did you like it?
The third to last one with Walt?
No, not Walt. Allison Janning is mom and the mother, and you find Jacob and Manny.
It's like the whole 2,000 years ago kind of deal.
Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't mind that because you're finding out more about those guys, but I also liked kind of the Man in Black having just no clue. Like having no, I like the idea that some things just happen because they happen. Like,
yeah,
the island sparked this, but also like there's that weird period too, like that last like fifth season. I think I watched the first four seasons all together probably about 50 times, but like the last two seasons, maybe because because it was over and I was sad. I'm not as. I got to go back and watch those more.
Well, it's almost like
I do remember the Alice and Janney episode being like, all right, I get it. Cool. I don't know where you came from, but.
Well, it's like.
But that's like Nick. Oh, I was. Nikki Appello. I was a big fan of Nikki Appello.
You were a big fan?
I am. I still am. I think it's hilarious. I mean, that's like one of the best things that's ever happened to television. Like, I remember. I can remember standing up and when they first showed up in that episode and they just had lines like in the first 10 seconds. And I was like, who the hell are these people? And just being genuinely angry. But then like nobody liked them. So Damon buried them alive. It's the greatest. I think it's one of the best episodes of television ever. It's the biggest like FU from a writer.
Well, that's what I've found, you know, talking to some of the writers after the fact. A lot of writers kind of say what was that episode title? Exposé is one of their favorite episodes just because it was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek kind of, you know, you hate them, this is what we're going to do to them.
It was completely commenting on the fandom of the show, which is like, hey, we're doing this for you and we're listening to you also, so if this is what you want, not only are you going to get it, you're going to get it, but it's going to be pretty brutal.
Well, that was the...
I thought that was a pretty awesome move on their part, to be honest.
Well, that was the one mistake they made, because Lost was the kind of show you couldn't just put... they were there the whole time, because people pick it scene by scene by scene by scene, and so that's why people didn't accept it. I thought always said that they should have had them. Maybe they just could have been on the front of the plane. They were somewhere on the... And they just happened to come... That might have worked better than what trying to, you know, say, oh, they were there the whole time.
Yeah, and it's like... The problem with Lost is, like... Lost was beautiful, and then now I'm an adult, you know. Well, I was an adult then. But you know, you can go back and go like, oh, why did this happen? And it's like, oh, because in real life some people got DUIs. Like, like, and then you go like, oh, that wasn't necessarily their writing intention. You know, I think Mr. Right. Echo wouldn't come back for the last episode because of money, and you're just like, oh, that sucks. Like, that's real life impeding on what I want to see, which is Mr. Echo sitting there going, like, you know, sitting there with his little stick, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's
scary, man.
Even him leaving the show is because he didn't want to be on the island anymore. And
he like wanted to go direct a movie. Yeah. He ended up doing G.I. Joe. Come on, man.
and that's one of, I think, one of those things people don't realize. That changed a lot of the show. Because from what I understand, Locke's storyline, how it kind of progressed through the later seasons, was really originally supposed to be Echo's storyline. And I think they kind of had to do a switch when Echo left and kind of put Locke in that place. But still, you are right. Definitely, there was a show that you watched on the TV screen, but there was real life on the outside that also impacted what we saw on TV.
Yeah, like going back and rewatching episodes, there's the jaded actor part of me that has been working long enough and now has met most of, and also embarrassed myself in front of most of these people now. you know, you go back and you watch it and it's just, it's a different point. You're like, oh, that person didn't want to be on the show. And that kind of sucks. And then you give, you know, you can give that. I'm like, well, that storyline can, I'll forgive that because that was out of their,
yeah,
out of their hands and whatnot. And, but still pretty amazing show.
Yeah,
still
absolutely.
Pretty amazing what they did.
Absolutely. Well, we did, all of our special guests that come on, we do ask them to kind of go break down their top five favorite moments from the show. And do you have your top five moments that you would break down from the show, being the huge fan that you are?
I think I do. I think they change a great deal.
Okay.
They change a lot. But for number five, I'll say the Nikki and Paolo episode. That's always a solid number five for me. Always just like... That happened on television because Damon got mad.
This is what happens when you piss Damon off.
I was spoiled on that episode.
It makes me love him so much. It's like, you don't like it? Well, watch them die slowly underground. that, to me, was like a big one. Obviously, standing up. I like the two or three moments for me where I just stood up in front of the television and went, like, I cannot believe they just did that. We Have to Go Back is probably the biggest shock one for mm-hmm. me.
Yeah.
Yep. Some other great moments. The beginning of season three, where they pull away and you see the Dharma.
Yes.
You see Dharmaville for the first
yep.
time.
Yes.
Yep.
That was pretty mind-blowing.
That was Downtown, I think, is the CD that...
Yeah.
...that was played. No, yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah. that's three.
It's like picking your favorite children.
The it's Lost to me is, I don't remember what episode it was. It's a Hurley episode where they play Joe Purdy's Wash Away when he's listening to the headphones.
That's Tabula Rasa.
Yeah, thank you. It's like, oh, that's the end of the Lock episode?
No, that's the end of the episode before the Lock episode. Kind of set up Lock episode.
Well, yeah, that whole thing, I mean, the Lock thing is just fucking brilliant.
Oh,
pardon
yeah.
me. the Lock episode is just genius.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then for some reason that song and seeing them all in that montage on the beach, like, that's lost to me. Like, whenever I hear that song, like, that reminds me of that show. And I don't know, just that comes to me. But
yeah.
The best moment in the whole series for me, I don't know why, just because I felt like it paralleled my life at the time, was when you found out that Hurley was given the island. That to me was just like, that was the best. I loved him. I loved his character. I think he deserved it the most. And mm-hmm. I think like they essentially what they did was they gave it to the fans.
Yeah.
And they said,
ooh,
like,
nice.
These
that's
are the
a good call.
Yeah, to me that was just like, yeah, this is for all the people, you know, who love it, and all the
yeah.
people who have just a big heart, and the reason why they're there is for that, and maybe that. I think yeah, that might be it to me.
That's
I still
that's,
think about that a lot.
Actually, I think that's the first time I've heard that, in the sense that it going to Hurley is basically a symbolism or symbology or whatever of giving it to the fans, because Hurley was always kind of the voice of the fan. On the show. That's
yeah,
a really good analogy.
I may have had a couple during the finale, and I just remember thinking, like, they gave it to us. They gave it to us. The island, they gave it to us. Like,
that's great. That's a really
perfect.
Good one.
That, yeah.
That's a really good number one. And then kind
of a lot of weird moments. Scott and Steve was always a pleasure of mine.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of little tiny moments. But I also love the bird that's in Hurley. Like,
yes, the Hurley bird,
yeah.
The weird misdirect. Like, I love stuff like that never got answered. Don't need an answer. Just want to see the bird almost say Hurley.
That's it. Well, I think we, in one of our conversations with Damon, he talked about kind of that midichlorian effect of, you know, the Star Wars prequels. You don't need to know how the Force works or why it's there. It kind of devalues...
Yeah.
the actual mystery of it. And I think that's something Damon's always done well, is not having to necessarily, you know, go through the midichlorian explanation. He leaves some of that stuff up to you as the viewer to come up with your own ideas or about what it is.
Yeah, it's that whole like J.J. Abrams mystery box thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm pumped he's taking over Star Wars. Like, I'm so excited about that movie.
I've met him a couple times, and he's like the nicest guy in the world. And I just went to Comic Con. I missed you guys at Comic Con, but I wanted to see you guys. J.J. Was nice enough to bring me to the Star Wars panel, and
nice.
It was just like,
wow.
It was the craziest. I mean, yeah, it was. First of all, I'm a huge J.J. fan. I couldn't believe I'm sitting in a car talking to him, but nonetheless, then 5 minutes later, you're with, you know, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher,
oh,
Harrison Ford, and we're all just sitting there talking, and you're like, "Who created Lost and this? And you did Star Trek? Like,
you're the God of the Geeks."
How cool is
it to
be
Holden, like my son? Like, yeah. Like, thank you, sir.
You're so wonderful. but yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely pumped about the new Star Wars. It's almost like they did at the Comic-Con panel. They did that kind of showing all the practical effects and everything. It was just like that was like that love letter to the fans of Star Wars, that, you know, we're treating this right. We're treating this with the reverence that this deserves, which is really cool.
I'm not saying that I have. I'm not saying that I haven't, but I may have seen like a minute or two or a couple of minutes of footage from it.
Woo!
And it is perfect.
Oh,
it's
man.
It's just perfect.
Nice.
Just absolutely perfect. If you were like, you don't need to see the movie, I'd be like, all right, yeah, I know it's going to be. It's exactly what I wanted it to be, and that I can't wait to see.
Oh,
it.
Oh man, that's
right.
Awesome!
Favorite Star Wars movie.
Oof.
Now, before you give the answer, I don't know if you Jack for a long time has had this stupid debate about how.
Don't.
All right,
don't,
fine. I won't
don't,
give it up.
Don't,
I won't give. It, just
wait
we'll hear your opinion first.
I'm going to say the made-for-TV movie, The Battle for Endor. So, I'm going to go Jedi. I know it's not a popular.
Ah, okay.
I know it's not a popular answer, but I'm going Jedi.
So the most people I hear about Jedi is that that's like the first Star Wars they remember, generally from people of our age range. That's the one they remember, and that's what they had so much. Was it kind of that thing for you, or was just that story you really liked?
I mean, Empire is the. I don't disagree that Empire is the best movie as far as like setting the tone for Star Wars and the plot and everything.
Yeah.
But if I'm gonna sit down and watch one of the movies, I go Jedi every time, just because kind of can't beat Jabba's palace. Like that whole sequence is just phenomenal. And everything in I mean, the Ewoks. Like, people don't like the Ewoks.
I don't mind the Ewoks.
Who cares?
I don't like the
cares.
I'm fine
not hurting nobody.
It's not Jar Jar Binks. I mean, there's so many worse things that have happened. That's not that big a deal.
It's not Biling.
It's not Biling. Yeah. Biling is in the prequels. She's in.
Not anymore.
Well, she's. Oh, they cut her out of it.
They cut her out of it because she did the cover of Playboy and she held a lightsaber and they cut her out of it.
Oh, dang!
So they're just looking for to get rid of her.
That's one of the few things where George has changed it, and it worked out for the best.
See, my argument is always New Hope.
Biling was Jar Jar Binks.
Very true.
There's a whole seventh movie with just it's all about Jar Jar's tattoos.
So Jack's debate for the longest time is that New Hope is the best movie because it's the first movie. But
well, no, that's not. You're not saying it right.
That's
you.
It's
without,
the first one. And
without a New
one,
Hope,
there wouldn't
be another one, would there? If New Hope wasn't successful, there wouldn't be another one.
I agree. I mean, it is. It's so hard. I mean, like everyone says, Empire. I just personally like that. But yeah. But I mean. If I was gonna watch the one after Jedi, I might go with New Hope, and like I would watch Empire last. I like all the Hoff stuff, but
yeah, it's almost
it's dark and very depressing.
Well, for me too, because I was 14 when it, I think 14 when I came out, and waited in line for like 3 hours to see it. It was at a big theater, not the little, you know, cookie cutter ones they have now. And it was such a, I'm just sitting there at 14 going, oh my God, what am I watching? And I think from there, I became a fan of Star Wars because of that movie. I mean, it was just
oh,
it changed,
yeah.
It changed the way I looked at movies. Because I'm a big Logan's Run fan, and then you look at the special effects in Logan Run and Star New Hope, there's a difference.
Yeah, it's crazy to think. I don't think, I was born in 77. I think my first movie was Empire or Jedi, one of them. Mm-hmm. My first movie in the theaters, but like I can't imagine being a teen and seeing Star Wars for the first time and just being like, what have I just seen?
Because you don't see things like that, and that's like, it was just incredible. It was just a movie. So,
Bobby, I know we've been recording for a while. I want to be respectful of your time. Do you have time if we can go through some of the listener questions to close out the show?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so we kind of posted it out there on our Facebook page. You know, Bobby Moynihan's coming on the show. And send in your questions. Let's go through some of these here. First one is, how much are we paying you to appear on the podcast?
just one. They're paying me exactly one Survivor video.
Send it.
This is a Lost-specific question. What if Bobby had carte blanche in being cast in Lost? What role would you choose?
Ooh. I would probably get cast as Hurley. If this was something that I just went and auditioned for.
Mm-hmm.
I played Hurley on the show. I did Hurley for my SNL audition.
Oh, you did?
One of my bits was this is Hurley from Lost trying to open a jar of Dharma Initiative chili. And I just walked around on stage for 5 minutes and I couldn't open a jar. And I just kept going, dude, could you? And that was it. That was all I did. I just had long hair and I was a big guy.
You're not a Lost fan.
I would probably be cast as Hurley, but I think I would want to play. If I could choose any part to play, it might be Ben.
Yeah?
Either Ben or Locke, yeah.
I mean, Michael Emerson's
Charlie's
character.
Brother.
So.
Charlie's brother, Liam.
I do that. I do the one quote, is it, chew, baby brother. I do that all the time. Now this one, we kind of went over it a little bit before, but, did you create any of your characters or did the SNL writers create them all? I think we've kind of, it seems like a lot of them come from you.
Drunk Uncle was definitely, an idea that I pitched to Jost and we just kind of, started going from there. Same thing with Crispino. If you see me doing a character, it's pretty much because I wrote it and got someone else to help me with it. Or, that's kind of how it goes there.
Crispino's just great. Like, I feel like we all know a Crispino.
It's just my dad.
Did
you hear about this? Did you hear what happened to your sister? No, you haven't told me yet.
I'm pretty sure that's the line we always do. Like even now, I work for Google and we're in the office and we're like, I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be like this. what was the night of the SNL 4th anniversary show really like? You talked about it before, but I've heard legends of this after party. Were you part of any of those festivities?
I was, and it's so funny because I hear like everyone saying like, what was the after party like? What was the after party like? And after like 150 shows at SNL, you get pretty desensitized to it. And I'm realizing now that I was at the greatest party in the history of time, and I was looking there. I was going like, do they have mac and cheese? Like, is there food anywhere? I could really grab like a little snack or something. And they're like, you know, Jimmy Fallon, Mick Jagger, Taylor Swift, Rihanna, Beyonce, they're all on stage, right? And I was like, yeah. It's like because you're tired, you just finished a long day's work.
Yeah.
But no, it definitely was one of those things where it's like, I know I'm at something that a lot of people are going to talk about for the rest of my life, so I should enjoy it. But I'll do that after I find the appetizers.
Because I know we heard about the. I was like, that would be such a cool party to be at.
Oh my God.
Well, yeah, it was pretty nuts. A lot of them are like that. Like, it's just 5 o'clock in the morning, and then all of a sudden, you know, Foo Fighters is playing, and Mick Jagger gets up on stage with them, and then Jason and Kristen do a song, and like, it's chance.
Well,
I'm very lucky.
I got to ask you one question though. I'm a huge Steve Martin fan, and you've obviously met him. And is he cool in real life? Can you answer that? He's like one of my bucket list of people to meet, Steve Martin. I mean, I used to do Steve Martin, his Let's Get Small album. I still do it today.
Oh, yeah. My first year on the show, my birthday fell on a Saturday, and I was like, what are the chances? And then Steve Martin was hosting, and I was like, what are the chances of this? And it was a pretty amazing. He came up to me on Friday and walked over to me and went, Tommy? And I went, no, Bobby. And he went, Caster Writer. And he was completely kidding. but I was like gutted. Like I was gutted. Oh, like, I was like, we've been rehearsing all week. but he was completely kidding. And, he's one of those guys where you just realize like he's been doing this forever. He could do this show, you know, like. Yeah, you realize like I'm on like I was in one sketch with him and it aired and I just went like that's it, I've worked with Steve Martin, like that's me and Steve Martin right there. It's one of the amigos.
That's incredible.
Like, it's,
yeah, that's awesome.
That's another thing that SNL does for you is like you're walking down the hall and then all of a sudden Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, and Martin Short are coming towards you and they're all in their Three Amigos outfits and you're like yeah no this is. This is normal. This is something that happens all the time.
I think what we're learning from this conversation is if you're a big geek, a big nerd, get cast on SNL and all of your dreams will come true.
Yeah, yeah. Just be a lazy bum your whole entire life and just brush up on all your pop culture.
And all this time I thought it was podcasting.
Yeah, no. Smoke like just enough weed to be funny, but not enough that it ruins your life.
For you kids playing at home.
Yeah.
it's very cool. Let's go to another one here. So wants to know if someone on SNL decides whether a character should be featured on Weekend Update or used in a recurring sketch. Is that Lauren's decision? Something like a drunk uncle. What makes the difference between a sketch versus Weekend Update character?
It's kind of the audience's decision. Usually, if you come up with an update thing, it's usually like, hey, I wanted to try this on Update. And then there's like the very rare occasion where you're like, I want to try this character. And you do it, and then it doesn't work, and they go, maybe Update? But that's also kind of like the sign of death, like, because then you go like, oh, now I just got to do it on Update, but it was like something different, and then you kind of get sick of it. But
yeah.
I mean, the glowing, one of that is definitely Stefan, Stefan was a sketch.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Hader's Stefan was a sketch, and they tried it, and they did it with Ben Affleck, and it did okay, but it was a little weird. And then they tried it again with Bradley Cooper, and I don't think it made it on, or if it did go on, it didn't go as well. And then it just kind of went away, and then everyone was like, ah. That sketch never did great, but we love the character so much. And then they were like, why don't we just bring him on as like a critic for New York clubs? And like, that's when it took off. Like that's, you know, it was like, it needed to be on Update. That's I think the hardest part of the show is Update, because it's just you sitting there and every time you do it, you're just looking to the lens and you're going, there's 10 million people watching this. I hope I don't screw it up.
Now, do you think about that when you're on stage or just,
I couldn't.
Are you just going?
Yeah, when I'm doing Drunk Uncle, especially because it's fun and I have fun doing it and I'm comfortable doing it, there are definitely moments where, like, if I get a laugh on something and I have 2 or 3 seconds to jump into my own head where I go, there's people, like, they're like my high school teacher's probably watching this. I don't know why it jumps to specific weird people in my life that I had, like, one encounter with where I'm like,
Mrs. Halverson, she's watching this right now.
She said I'd go nowhere.
That guy, that guy at the deli who, when I told him I was on SNL, didn't believe me. I wonder if he's watching right now.
The guy that sold me the weed.
Take that, deli guy.
No, he's definitely watching.
And last question is, were you part, we know you're part of the Lost fan community, you went on blogs and stuff, but they want to know, like, how much were you in it, what blogs did you go to, or what podcasts did you listen to, and what was the dumbest theory you ever believed?
Oh, wow. Careful. I was pretty, me and my girlfriend were pretty, pretty Jay and Jack. I mean, Darmalars.
Yep.
We would do a bunch of them, but Jane Jack was just the one. That was the one for me that just that clicked, and that music too. When I went back to start listening, when you guys started redoing it again, and pretty much like the month before I started, I contacted you guys. That music, man, it's so good to hear that music again.
see, somebody likes it, Jack.
Well, the beginning of your thing. Do you not like it?
He hates my music.
Right? No, I just give him a hard time.
No,
because when we're recording, he doesn't have to play the music, but he plays the music. So I have to listen to the music every.
Because it gets you in the spirit of the segment.
No, it doesn't.
It's also one of the best parts about the show is you guys fighting. It's kind of the best part.
About Locke?
And I did a lot. Well, actually, side note, I was in Inside Out, the movie, the Pixar movie Inside Out.
Yes.
And Michael Giacchino did the music for that as well. And I just met him recently, and I begged him because I played a character. Me and Paula Poundstone were these characters called the Forgetters, and Michael Giacchino wrote like a theme, like the Forgetters theme. And I just went to one of his shows out in San Diego where he was conducting they had like an orchestra play the Star Trek soundtrack.
Yep.
And I met him and just begged him. I was like, please, I'm the gigantic Lost fan. Like, can I get the sheet music from that song that he wrote for my character?
Oh, my God.
Well, that's good music, though.
That's good. Brilliant. Music, I've loved him. I mean,
he's a nice...
He's really nice too. Like the one time I met him, he actually waited for me to come from a different panel.
I met him first, and I said, "Oh my God, you went to a different panel."
I did,
and I'm like going, "Jay's going to regret not coming to this panel." And he waited for Jay to come out of his other panel to talk with him.
Yeah,
I said he'd really like to meet you.
And this, I mean, he's already won an Oscar by this point. I was like, "You're way more important than I will ever be in my life." And it's the coolest thing that you like waited to like talk to me. But
it was like 25 minutes he waited for you,
but. Yeah, he's an awesome
dude. I like meeting those guys because they're all geniuses and they don't act like it. Like they all act like, can you believe we're doing this?
You said you listened to us. Did you ever try to call and Jay never played your call?
I think, to be honest, I think I may have called once. I don't think he ever played it, but I think I called once.
All right,
definitely.
We're gonna have to go find the phone call.
Damn, they're all still in there somewhere.
Because people would yell at me. I go, Jay's in charge of the phone calls.
Well, those were tough because, like, I'd have to sift through like 500 calls by myself. So there was a certain point that some didn't.
Especially
didn't
a really good episode because it would go in banks of 60.
They would like 60 right away would just show up.
I go, uh oh, they liked the episode.
And then the
emails would start coming. I'd start answering because I answered all the emails.
Yeah.
So I'd start answering emails and fighting with people, and it was great.
any blogs that you liked?
I wasn't really like
more
podcasting. I don't remember. Yeah, I was more about the podcast. I remember like there were definitely ones that I would go look up every day, but I'm just blanking.
It's all good. As long as you remember us, that's what matters.
It's all matters. Just be real. Well,
and
at least the Jack part.
And what was the craziest theory that you actually believed, or the dumbest theory that you actually believed in retrospect?
I'm trying to think. I definitely think like I've definitely thought like I was going around telling everyone like I figured out Lost. I figured it out. I know what they're gonna do, but I don't. I'm trying to think of what that was. I remember having a theory about the smoke monster, and that it was like the key to the whole thing was like. Like I remember telling people that at some point the entire island was like made up of the particles that were the smoke monster. and thinking like that, like whatever that was like that was like the entire island was made up of that stuff. But that was very early on.
That's pretty good, and that's how the island kind of moves too.
Yeah, I think I just thought like, oh, it's just like everything but Jack is big. Like, it's just being. Everything is being made up like that.
I had that great theory once. I thought I figured it out, but that's where Rose and Bernard worked for Dharma. The plane crash was staged. Remember, I had like it was my 7-minute theory.
Yeah,
I had it written down, and it turned out most of it was wrong.
Aww. Yeah,
except Rose and Bernard, they did work for Dharma. They were just retired.
Anyway, no, that's really good. Well, I mean, honestly,
I really wanted Damon and them to film the monkey in the chair turning around. Do you remember that? Them talking about that they were going to end Lost at one point with a chimpanzee and it's behind a desk in a chair turning around and just explaining what happened. I kind of wish they actually did that.
Well, I mean, that was another fun part of the experience was Damon Carlton's podcast, the official Lost podcast, and their kind of commentary throughout the whole thing, which is a lot of fun too. But it's just, it was special. Like looking back on Lost and what that was, the podcast, the fan communities, everything. Like it was this live thing beyond just the TV show that everybody kind of participated in. It was a special experience.
Amazing.
For sure. And to your point, it changed our lives, completely. I met my wife through doing this podcast. I have a kid now. It's crazy
How your life just went.
Yeah, went down.
Congratulations.
But yeah, it's crazy how that can happen.
We have a better relationship. Jay and I have a better relationship.
Because I hated you before we did this podcast. It's really...
We like each other now. It's hard to tell on the podcast.
But Bobby, honestly, this is one of the highlights of the year, getting to talk to you and getting to kind of pick your brain. And
we've been on. I couldn't wait for this night to happen.
Well, thanks, guys. I'm sorry it took so long to happen.
It's all right.
You guys have been so wonderful.
Just thank you so much. And if you ever want to come on again and talk, or if you want to be on Jack's next Survivor audition video, just
because I had given up on it. Done. Now that you're in.
No. No, I've kind of hell bent on now it has to happen. I gotta get you on there.
Maybe you both can be on the Zamboni. We'll just have a two.
Yeah, I think so.
Wait, sitting on my lap naked.
You don't want me naked, then you won't get it.
But
I think that's what held me back.
Yeah. What?
Being naked on the Zamboni, but it was cold.
It was very cold.
It was very cold.
Bobby, thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time
and
geeking out with Lost look forward to everything that you're doing in the future. You're an awesome comedian and we love everything that you do. But I think the coolest part is you're a gigantic Lost nerd, and it's great that somebody is, out there and famous as you is just as nerdy and geeky about
it. It makes
this stuff
me feel better
us.
About myself.
It's like he's a cool guy. He's important. He's on SNL. He loves it just as much as I do. It's okay.
He sat next to Paul McCartney.
but anyways, thank you so much, and we'll see you later.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right,
bye.